Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
Tulare, California isn't the kind of town you'd expect to collect ghosts. It sits quiet and sun-warmed in the San Joaquin Valley, a place where the air smells of dust and crops, and the nights carry more crickets than secrets. But for him, the haunting didn't care where it happened. It simply followed. He'd lived there all his life between two houses and two versions of himself, the boy who dreamed of snakes in the corner and the man who still couldn't sleep in the dark. It started before memory itself, night terrors so bad his parents would rush down the hall to find him screaming, eyes open but unseeing, pointing at the corners of his room. "There are snakes," he'd cry, or worse, "there are people outside." But when the lights came on, there was nothing. No movement, no shadows, just a small boy shaking, drenched in sweat, looking at things no one else could see. The dreams eventually stopped, or at least his parents said they did. What he remembered first, what stuck, came years later, the day after his grandmother died. He'd been sleeping in his parents' bed, as he often did back then. The darkness of his own room was too deep, too thick. His parents didn't argue it. They were grieving, and the house felt emptier without his grandmother's voice echoing through it. That night he woke up for no reason at all, just the faint stir of air, the sense that something was moving beside him. He turned his head to the left, and there she was. His grandmother stood by his mother's dresser, bathed in a strange yellow-white glow, as if projected from an old film reel. She was sorting through papers, her hands moving slowly, methodically, like she was still tending to unfinished business. He froze. His mind understood and didn't all at once. She was dead. But there she was, solid, silent, impossible. Terror bloomed inside him, quick and sharp. He buried his face into the pillow, squeezed his eyes shut, and waited for it to go away. When morning came, the memory stayed. He didn't tell anyone for years. The next time it happened, he was older, old enough to tell the difference between dream and waking. It was late. His brother was asleep beside him, the soft orange glow of his old receiver radio humming in the dark. A cold breeze brushed his cheek. Normal for that drafty old house, he thought. But then from the corner of his vision, something pale moved, a dull white blur sliding low across the floor. He held his breath. The radio clicked off by itself, but the sudden silence was deafening. He hid under the covers, heart pounding, listening for footsteps, for voices, for anything that might explain it. But the room stayed still. When he finally peeked out, the radio light was gone, the dark complete. He didn't sleep again that night. That was when the dreams began. Visions of figures with glowing red eyes. Sometimes they were outside his window, peering in through the glass. Other times, he saw them down the long stretch of hallway connecting the living room and the breezeway. At the far end stood a tall shape draped in a dark robe, those same red eyes burning from beneath the hood. They looked straight through him, searing into his skull, until the terror snapped him awake. He told himself it was just nightmares, the leftovers of childhood fear. But the house had its own ways of reminding them all it wasn't just him. One night, the pounding started. It sounded like someone sprinting full speed and slamming into doors over and over again. The noise shook the frame of the house. His parents brushed it off. Old houses make sounds. But deep down, everyone knew that was a lie. No settling floorboards moved like something trying to get in. The banging would come at random, sometimes in the middle of the night, sometimes just as they'd begun to fall asleep. It never lasted long. Just long enough to leave that feeling crawling under the skin. Then one night, it wasn't even in his house. He was at a friend's birthday party down the street. The other kids had passed out in sleeping bags across the living room. He was awake, playing Super Nintendo under the flicker of the TV. Behind him, the kitchen was silent. Then came the sound of pots clanging, a metallic crash that echoed like a shout. He spun around. Nothing. His friend's mother stormed in seconds later, voice sharp with suspicion. "What are you doing?" she hissed. "Nothing. I'm just playing." She walked into the kitchen and froze. Every single cabinet door was wide open. The room was still. The air was cold. He'd had enough experience by then to know when something was wrong, and this was wrong. Whatever haunted him, whatever followed him, had found a way to move beyond his walls. It wasn't tied to the snakes in the corner anymore. It was tied to him. By the time they moved across town, he was 11, an age where you're supposed to outgrow monsters, not invite them along. The new house in Tulare sat on a quiet street, lined with tired trees and chain-link fences. It didn't look haunted. It didn't feel haunted. For a while, it wasn't. The silence held for 2 good years, long enough for him to forget how it felt to wake up cold, how fear used to curl in his chest like a sleeping animal. But some things don't die when you move. They wait. He started sleepwalking again when he turned 13. It began small, finding himself sitting up in bed, the room wrong in its silence. Then he started waking in stranger places, the hallway, the living room, once in the kitchen with his hand on the refrigerator door. He'd have no memory of walking there. Just the sudden awareness that he was standing in darkness, breathing hard, the house dead quiet around him. The last time it happened, he woke in front of the front door. It was open, the night spilling in. The porch light cast a faint yellow pool across the floorboards, and outside the street was empty. He stood there, staring out, not knowing what had brought him there or how long he'd been standing still. He stopped telling his parents when it happened. There wasn't anything they could do. And besides, they already looked at him differently. Like they weren't sure if what haunted him was real or something only he could build. But whatever it was, it seemed to sleep when he did. Until Pismo Beach. A few years later, his family and a couple of friends went fishing near the coast. They stayed in his friend's late grandmother's trailer park home, a small, cozy place that smelled faintly of salt and old wood. His two friends took the pull-out bed, and he set up a cot in the living room near a record player that hadn't worked in years. He never slept easily in new places. The air always felt too unfamiliar, the silence too watchful. That night, as the trailer creaked in the wind, he heard a faint ticking. Tick, tick. It was soft, rhythmic, maybe something loose outside, a piece of siding, a swinging latch. He told himself not to worry. But then the ticking stopped, and something else started. A blast of sound, static and shrieking, and noise so loud it felt like a physical force, erupted from the corner of the room. He jumped, heart slamming in his chest. It was the record player. The thing was unplugged. He covered his ears and looked around wildly, waiting for someone, anyone, to react. But his friends slept on, dead to the world. His father, a notoriously light sleeper, didn't stir. The sound didn't fade. It swelled, scraping against the air like the world's angriest scream. He bolted up and ran to the record player, fumbling with the knobs. Nothing. It wasn't even powered on. "Stop! Stop! Stop!" He yanked the speaker wire from the back. Instant silence. The moment it stopped, he realized his hands were shaking. His breath came in short, sharp bursts. He waited for someone to wake up to ask what had happened. But the trailer was perfectly still again. The kind of silence that feels staged. In the morning, no one believed him. His friends laughed. His father shrugged it off. No one else had heard the sound. He wanted to argue, but what could he say? That the noise had been so loud it felt alive? That it had screamed like something trying to claw its way out of the static? He didn't talk about it again. The rest of the trip was uneventful. They fished, they joked, they went home sunburned and tired. But that night lingered. It burrowed into his mind and stayed there. And in the quiet weeks that followed, the air around him began to change again. It started small, a prickle at the back of his neck, a heaviness in the dark. Then the dreams returned, not the old ones with red eyes, but something newer, stranger. He began to see faces in mirrors, not for real, but in the split second between sleep and waking, that half-dream where the body can't move, where the room feels both familiar and wrong. One night, he dreamed of standing in front of his bathroom mirror. The reflection was him at first, then it wasn't. As he leaned closer, the face changed. Skin gray, eyes black and bottomless. A woman's face, or maybe a girl's, staring back with a glare so filled with hate that it pulled the air out of his lungs. He woke up, or thought he did. His eyes were open, but he couldn't move. Sleep paralysis? He knew what it was, but knowing doesn't help when it feels like something's already in the room. He tried to breathe, to speak, but his body wouldn't obey. The girl's face still floated in his mind, close, watching. Then the air shifted. Someone else was there. He felt the weight of eyes on him and managed to roll his head just enough to see it, a tall, black-robed figure standing beside the window. No face, no eyes, just the shape of a person draped in shadow. It didn't move. It didn't need to. Its stillness was worse than any gesture could have been. He didn't feel fear this time, not like before. What rose inside him was anger, raw, unreasonable anger. He wanted it gone. He shut his eyes. He forced himself to breathe. When he woke again, it was morning. The anger was gone. The fear, too. But the memory stayed sharp as glass. Later, when he stumbled across articles online about shadow people, something inside him clicked into place. The descriptions were perfect. The hat man, the robed figure, the sense of paralysis and presence. Whatever this was, it wasn't new. And maybe he thought, it wasn't just in his head. After the night of the black-robed figure, something in him changed. He still looked like himself, still worked, still laughed with friends, but inside he'd crossed a line. Once you've seen the dark with your eyes open, you never really sleep again. It didn't happen every night, not anymore. But the feeling lingered. The air would grow heavy around 3 a.m., pressing down on him like the house itself was breathing against his skin. He'd wake drenched in sweat, his heart racing, unsure if he'd heard something or simply felt it. He told himself it was nothing, that everyone wakes up sometimes, but deep down, he knew the hour wasn't random, because that's when it always came. The static in the air, the sense that something unseen was just outside the frame of the world waiting. He started sleeping with the TV on. The blue light filled the room with a hum that made the silence less personal. As long as something else was speaking, he didn't have to listen to the quiet. Still, the sense of being watched never quite faded. It was worse when he was alone in the house, an invisible gaze following him from room to room, soft as breath, patient as time. He tried to logic his way through it. Maybe it was stress. Maybe it was his medication. Maybe it was just an overactive imagination that refused to grow up. But then his mother began having her own experiences, and she didn't like to talk about them at first. But one night, over dinner, she admitted that sometimes she woke in the middle of the night, frozen in place, listening to whispers. Two voices. Always the same two. Never loud, never clear, but close, like someone leaning in from the other side of the dark. She'd said that in those moments, she felt the air moving near her ear, like breath without a body. And then, in a voice that tried too hard to sound casual, she added, "I've seen the gates of hell in our living room once." He wanted to laugh it off, wanted to tell her it was just a dream. But he didn't. Because if he believed his own memories, if he believed the black-robed figure beside his bed, then who was he to call her delusional? They didn't talk about it again. The house stayed quiet for a while after that. The only noises were the ordinary kind. Pipes, wind, the steady creak of an old foundation. Life went on. He turned 22, got a job, tried to forget the feeling of being stared at through the walls. But forgetting isn't the same as being free. Even now when he closed his eyes, sometimes the darkness behind his lids wasn't empty. He'd see faint outlines moving there, shadows with memory, like after images burned into his vision. He never saw the robed figure again, not fully. But sometimes he caught a flicker, a suggestion of shape reflected in the black glass of the turned-off television. He stopped looking too closely. And yet, even with time and distance, one question refused to die. What if it never left? The pattern had always been the same. quiet for a while, then sudden, impossible chaos. A blur at the edge of the bed, the voice in the dark, the pounding on the doors. It didn't behave like a ghost tied to a house. It behaved like something that knew his name. He wondered if it had attached to him back when he was small, pointing at the corners of his room, screaming about snakes that weren't there. Maybe it had never been imagination at all. Maybe something had been standing there even then, waiting for him to notice. And when his grandmother appeared by the dresser, yellow, white, and silent, maybe she wasn't the first visitor from beyond. Maybe she was warning him about what was already there. He tried to make peace with the thought. He'd read enough stories online to know other people had seen similar things. The hat man, the robed figure, the shadow at the foot of the bed. A shared haunting, repeating itself across lives like a chorus. That should have made him feel less alone. It didn't. Because even if other people saw it too, it didn't change what it meant that these things could follow you, wait for you, learn you. That they could cross from dream to waking, from the corners of the room into the center of your life. He sometimes wondered if it fed on fear, or if it just wanted attention. The difference stopped mattering once he realized both gave it strength. The medication helped. His moods evened out. The nights came easier. He stopped having sleep paralysis, stopped seeing things move in the dark, but he couldn't shake the habit of leaving the TV on. The silence was too big. Every once in a while, around that same hour between 3 and 4, he'd wake up for no reason. He'd tell himself it was nothing, just routine, just biology, but still, he'd glance toward the window, half expecting to see a shape standing there, its face hidden beneath a hood. And each time he whispered the same thing to the empty room. You're not real. Not anymore. But the truth was, he wasn't sure. Maybe it was all in his head. Maybe it was trauma or insomnia or the quiet hunger of imagination that refused to starve. Or maybe, just maybe, it really had followed him all this time. Because hauntings don't always stay where they begin. Sometimes they grow roots in people instead of places. And in Tulare, California, there's still a man who won't sleep without a light on. A man who swears he hears whispers when the TV cuts to static. A man who knows that some things once seen never really leave.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Extra value meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.